Hello friends. Today, I'll be talking about teaching methods. All of us are aware of the classroom scenario, right? We have time slots which are allocated for different subjects. Different teachers come, teach different subjects. Is the teaching method of all the teachers same? Of course not, right? All the teachers have their own style of teaching, which differs from the others. Some teach using the blackboard, some teach using projector, some have their own different way, some may teach by playing games. So, basically all the teachers have their own way of teaching. In that sense, first let us know what is teaching. Teaching actually means to impart knowledge to others. And method. Method means a way of doing something. A systematic and orderly way of doing something. In that sense, when we combine the two words, that is teaching and methods, we can just simply combine. It becomes the principles and methods used for teaching. That is, the way of giving instructions. These methods are actually the ways of organizing and presenting information to the students. That is, how you present yourself to the students. How you explain them so that they learn better, they understand better. Like, you all know that it's a very common term. What is the method of cooking? In that sense, the same way, we have a method of teaching. So, for a teacher, it is very important to know how children learn. Which way you can make learning interesting so that they pay attention in your lecture. And moreover, it should be easy for them. They should relate with what you are teaching. You should be at their level, basically. So basically teaching must include two major components. First, sending and then receiving information. Ultimately, a teacher tries his best to impart knowledge. Like if I understand, I'll try my best to put it in front of you. So in any communication, the main objective is to deliver the knowledge without destroying the actual meaning and objective of it. Today, a huge variety of methods ranging from teacher-centric approach, where teachers play the major role, to an indirect student-centric approach, where teachers take the back seat and children and their learning are given more importance. Earlier, almost a decade ago, the teacher-centric approach was very dominantly used. Remember the chalk and talk method? You have a classroom, a blackboard, a chalk, a teacher, and a textbook. The teacher enters, starts reading from the textbooks, explains on the blackboard, and that's it. The students are just expected to understand. But whether they actually understand or not is not even taken into consideration. Here, this is called the teacher-centric approach, where teacher is the main person. Students are nowhere important. Even if the students have any questions or any queries, they were rarely allowed to interrupt in between. It was like, wait till I finish the lecture and then you can ask the question. That also depends on the teacher. If the nature of the teacher was good enough, she would allow questions. Otherwise, it was like just one-way communication. I give, you take. Whether you understand or not is your lookout. Surely, you all must have gone through that, right? However, the current system of education is shifting. Is shifting its focus more on the student-centric approaches rather than the teacher-centric approaches. Now, students and learning is given more importance. The whole concept of traditional way of teaching, where teacher simply narrates and explains, is slowly getting replaced with more interactive and fun way of teaching and learning, where students participate. Their participation, their understanding is given more importance. A class is a collection of students. Students come from different backgrounds, all have different intelligence levels. Some are good, some are very intelligent, very bright. Some take time, their own time actually, to understand. Some are average. So, considering the needs of the class and considering the level of your students and the information actually, what are you going to teach? What skill is being taught in today's lesson? Considering all these things, what method you are going to use should be selected. You can't use the same method for all the groups. What is applicable for a senior class student may not be applicable for the juniors. So, considering the age group and all the other various factors, your material should be adjusted according to that. The main thing is what knowledge you want to impart, what actually you want them to learn, what is the objective, why are you teaching this? These questions should be very clear in the teacher's mind. She should know why is she doing this. Not just for the sake of teaching. But there has to be an objective. Like, if I'm teaching this, what I want the students to learn? What should they get out of it? According to all that, your method and your instructional material should be adjusted. We all must have seen the ads on TV these days. Educom computing, cloud computing teaching. So, what is all this actually? What is all this? In today's generation, this generation of students are not just satisfied with the basic graduation degree. The basic graduation is just a basic degree. To succeed, to become something, to get a position, you need extra skills, add on degrees, more knowledge. Even if you have more knowledge, smartness, your personality, all those things also matter. So, considering the needs of today's generation, which is continuously increasing. The requirements of the present generation are just increasing at a high speed. So, what we think is if the base of education is very solid, is strong, if the base is strong, then the further development becomes very easy and it becomes easier for the student to connect. If they have a strong base. So for that, today's educators consider that to form the base very strong. There are variety of methods which your teacher will use in her daily lessons. Example could be expository, working in groups, discussion, learning by doing. Then we have laboratory teaching, demonstration, role play, simulation, question and answers, games. There are many more. These are just a few of them. It's not necessary that only these methods are helpful. The teacher can even use her own creativity according to what she is going to teach or what she wants to say, according to her class, She can be creative and create her own new method of teaching. It's fine as far as the purpose of education is fulfilled, as far as no wrong information is getting conveyed. Plus, there is internet. You can search for various methods of making your plans interesting on the net. The expository method, it is a very popular method. In fact, since the term of education is come into consideration, is being practiced from decades and decades. Almost everyone uses this. You know what is this? At the very start, what I told you, the teacher comes, just lectures, explains, and reads from the textbook and leaves. This is expository method. It's not a very effective method of teaching. But yet, there's so many schools still using it. Maybe because they find the innovative ways are time consuming, or you know, the whole thing of I have to complete my portion. If I go behind all these innovative things, when will I complete them? All these things, they somewhere form a block. It stops the teacher from using these innovative methods. And then the best option which is left is expository method. Just come, teach, leave. Today, till today, there's so many institutes who are using this method. Here, the teacher should remember one thing, that students' concentration level is not more than 15 to 20 minutes. If you have a 40 minutes of a lecture, it's just practically impossible for all the students to concentrate on it. It's just that you want to finish your portion, that's it. You don't care whether the student is learning or no. So, there's no interaction, or maybe little interaction, between the teacher and the student here. One more method which can be used is working in groups. Here, the teacher will divide the class into small groups. Say a group of 4 or 5. Students will be asked to work in that particular group. They will be given an assignment or a task to complete together. But one thing should be remembered is, while the teacher will make these groups, she should keep in mind that the group should contain a mix of all the students. Like one student who's very intelligent, a high achiever, one who's a poor learner, and average student. If you keep a group of only high achievers and poor learners, then what will happen is that the poor learners group know that the high achievers are better than them, and the whole attitude will demotivate them. It will come in that their mind that anyways they are going to win. So that should not come into consideration. Plus, if there is a mixed group, the high achiever can help the poor learner to understand better. This way that other student can also understand better. So in this way, they learn teamwork. They learn how to interact. The thing of helping each other. Now here they have to help each other. Because if they don't, ultimately they will lose. So in order to win, they'll have to help each other. The unity thing, it will increase their social skills. It's a very good and effective way. Even the students do the major work. But here the teacher plays a very important role of the facilitator. She has to be there. She's expected to encourage the students. She has to help them in case of difficulty, guide them whenever they are required, and see whether they are able to do it or not. Let's see another method. Another method is discussion method. Now, discussion method is used very frequently as a mode of communication. It makes absorption of knowledge easier and it also stimulates the intelligence of the learner. In order to make the classroom discussions effective, you have to remember some points. First of all, the discussion has to be systematically organized. If the problem statement, that is, what is the discussion about? Why is the discussion held? Main problem for which you all are discussing, what you all are discussing. If that is well defined, it makes a great impact. As the students know where to focus, they focus on the main problem. It increases the quality of the discussion. If the problem is not well defined, if there is no main point, as in why are you discussing it, then the quality of the discussion reduces. Hence the outcome which comes after the discussion is over is not that effective. So first of all, make sure that before starting with the discussion, you give the students a well-defined problem. This is the problem statement, and hence I request you all to focus on this problem. The discussion topic can be given on the spot, but if you all are dealing with a complicated problem, say a issue which the student needs to understand before coming into the class, then you can inform the students of the topic in advance, say one day prior to the discussion, so that they have an opportunity to think about it. They will make their research, they'll make their study, so that next day when they come to class, they are all prepared and set for the discussion. This again gives the discussion a direction. The outcome is quite effective. Classroom discussions can be either held in groups, like you form two groups or three groups depending on your class size. Or you can even take the whole class as one and you continue with the discussion randomly. That depends on the topic, the choice of whether to divide the class into groups or discuss as a whole class. It depends on the topic, it depends on the circumstances. So that the teacher has to decide. Now again, discussion topics at times can be quite controversial. So to ensure that the discussion is running smoothly, that students do not indulge in fighting or no hot arguments are happening, for that the teacher has to properly guide the discussion. She has to keep the track of whether it is going on the right track or no. If she feels no, she can stop it there and then. Also, the most important part is do set a time limit for your discussion. That is very, very important. If there is no time limit for your discussion, then it will never come to a proper end or a proper conclusion. So, this is very important that before you start with the discussion, you have a time limit set for it. That this is the 20 minutes, we are going to speak in this 20 minutes, and then the teacher will summarize about the discussion. Another method can be role play. You all must have seen plays, various plays in schools or maybe outside school. Everyone is familiar with what a play is. Similarly, there is a concept of role play. This method increases the students' interest in the topic. While they are involved in role playing, they are representing a specific character. They experience that character either real or fictional, depends on what character you are playing. They experience that character themselves and they develop empathy towards the character. It improves the students' interpersonal and communication skills. Role playing is quite a fun way of learning. It allows the students to identify each other and they discover the new ways of understanding. The main thing is it makes learning interesting and fun. as they're actively participating in it. In schools, role-playing can be used for subjects like mathematics or history. History can be related quite well with role-playing method. All of us know that mostly students find learning history a bit boring because they cannot remember the sequence, they cannot remember the flow, because they cannot relate with the then character. It's quite difficult for them to remember things which has happened in past. But if the teacher uses role play in history, say suppose while teaching a history topic, if the teacher makes it in a fun way or makes it like a story, students are given certain characters to play. And if the students enact those characters and they enact the whole thing, it becomes quite easier for the students who are participating as well as the students who are watching it as audience. They can relate with those concepts quite easily at their level. Plus, retention of that topic, it becomes quite easy for them. So, you can use these techniques to teach such difficult subjects. There are mathematical concepts of addition and subtraction while using money. Like if you want to explain very small children on the give and take of money while you're going to buy something. Say for this, if you set up a small shop in your classroom and you ask one student to be a shopkeeper and the other to play as a customer and make it like a play that you're going buying certain things. And then you have to pay and then you have to return back money. So addition of money, subtraction using money, all these concepts, if they're doing it themselves, it stays in the long-term memory. It becomes easier for them to reproduce these concepts. So this way this helps. Role-playing and scenario analysis is mostly used in organizations that try to analyze a problem pertaining to the organization. It is also used in management institutions. But this similar kind of practice can be tried in other specializations too, like science and engineering. Science and engineering courses have practical. In support of those practicals, if the students are given a scenario and other options to solve a particular issue, then the students are exposed to decision making in a given environment. For example, consider that in teaching accounting, the role of accountant can be explained by role playing technique. Invoice bills can be given to students and ask them to assume the role of an accountant. Here, the real entries pertaining to transactions are made by the student, and this is more practical approach to teaching, while the theory is supplemented by proper practical knowledge. Similar kind of technique can be applied in management, engineering, and science courses as well. You just have to identify with them. One more important method can be using mind maps. Mind maps were developed in the late 60s by Tony Buzan as a way of helping students make notes that used only keywords and images. But mind map can be used by teachers as well to explain the concepts in an innovative way. They are much quicker to make and much easier to remember and review because of their visual quality. The non-linear nature of mind maps makes it easy to link and cross-reference different elements of the map. Mind maps are also very quick to review. It is very easy to refresh information in your mind just by glancing once. Mind maps can also be effective mnemonics, and remembering their shape and structure can provide the cues necessary to remember the information within it. They engage much more of the brain It helps connecting the facts than the conventional notes. It provides a visual element. The main notion behind mind mapping is that we learn and remember more effectively by using the full range of visual and sensor tools. Pictures, music, color, even touch and smell play a very important part in our learning. They help to recollect information for a long time. The key is to build up mind maps that make the most of these things, building on your own creativity, thinking and cross-linking between ideas that exist in our own mind. The recent research points that any particular information explained with the help of graphs, charts, make a high impact on the mind of people. And keeping this as a core concept, teachers may try to picturize the concepts and show the same to the students. If you provide the students with a visual element, it becomes very easy for them to relate between the various concepts, the interrelation between them, the interconnection between various concepts. Like the family tree, it shows a flow. Otherwise, it's very difficult to remember who is father of whose and how many sons does this person have. But a family tree, it provides the whole information in a consolidated manner, graphically. So, there are various concepts which can be shown using the mind maps. Then there is one more very important method. You must have been aware of it. It's games. Yes, games. Surely games can also be used as a method of teaching. There are traditional games and computer games. Let us consider traditional games. When we consider how infants and children learn, we can appreciate the effectiveness of games as a learning tools. Children love to learn. They feel it's fun. They see it as a fun, a journey of exploration and excitement. Games play a huge part in that exciting journey. From learning how to count, how to interact with family, people, learning colors, shapes, and there's so many things which children learn through games. So, if it is so effective and an engaging tool for children, there's no good reason why it should not work for engaging and developing learning in adults as well. Surely games can help adults learn as well. All must be aware of popular TV shows like Kaun Banega Karorpati, Bonvita Quiz Contest, Brain Cafe, etc. Such shows give you learning in a fun way as a part of the game. All these TV shows have been a huge hit among people. They are learning in a fun way. Similarly, some examples of traditional games which can be used as a teaching tool can be Scrabble. All of you must be aware of what Scrabble is, right? You form words and the other person forms connecting words and then words and words and words. It helps increase the vocabulary of children. Or Monopoly, which will teach the principles of capitalism. Then there are crossword puzzles. Or even simple classroom quiz, where you ask question and the children answer. They prove beneficial to children. They do prove beneficial. Games should be interactive. And it provides an enjoyable way of learning. And the most important part is students respond naturally to this type of learning, since it creates interest in them. But the game you choose should relate to the teaching goal. Like if you are using Monopoly to teach grammar or language, it's of no point. Whereas if you use Scrabble to do the same, yes, it will prove helpful. So depending on what is your teaching goal, what is the objective, you have to choose the game. Plus understanding how to play the game and remembering the rules of the game should be easy for the students. The teacher should take care that the game does not become more important than the learning. Children should not engross themselves in the game so badly that the ultimate objective of why you are playing this game or the motto behind the game is lost and learning is not happening at all. One more thing is, the game should motivate students to perform better. Games are best used as a warm-up exercise or when there is time left at the end of the lesson or maybe a means to review. Say a quiz can be a means of review, like after you complete a particular lesson, to review how much your students have understood, you can hold a quiz. This will give you a judgment of how much they have absorbed, how much they have learned, whether the learning has been effective, plus the student will also not get bored. After the games, one more method which I remember is question and answers. The question and answer method of teaching is quite important. Through questioning, the teacher can assess the knowledge of the student with respect to the subject being taught. The main advantage of this method is that this method of teaching can be used with all subjects. Or when there is no other teaching method suitable, you can use the question and answer method. For using this technique, the teacher should have thorough subject knowledge. And he or she should be well updated about the subject. The question and answer session can even be used vice versa. As in, the students ask questions to the teacher to extract information related to the topic while the teacher will answer the questions. In case if the teacher is not sure of the answer, she should admit it to the students. And she should either take the responsibility to find the answers or this responsibility of finding the answers can be given to the students. This technique can also be used while trying to activate the prior knowledge of any subject before starting a new subject. There is a very famous saying, I hear and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand. So, in this regard, we will discuss our next method of teaching, which is learning by doing method. The learning by doing method is an important aspect in experiencing the knowledge or events or activities. Also, this is an integral part of learning through experience. This learning by doing can also change the lifestyle and it affects in the behavioral change of an individual in the course of learning process. Children learn faster if they try to identify the principles on their own rather than simply accepting the teacher's explanation. Therefore, this method is also known as active learning or experimental learning. Here, the teacher himself or herself should be an active participant and he or she should be a role model for the students. If the teacher is enthusiastic, the children surely will participate with enthusiasm. Here, the students are given the problem statement or an activity which is to be done without telling them the outcome or what will be the solution to the problem. Here, in this method, the children perform the experiment, or if they are given a project, they complete the project, but under the very careful guidance of the teacher. They discover the answer on their own, which increases their confidence. There are some steps which are involved, which should be taken care of while learning through learning by doing method. The first one is experiencing, that is doing of an activity, the experience that you get. Then there is sharing, sharing the experience happened. You share what happened with your friends, you share at home with your parents, siblings. Then there is processing, that is performing the actions or performing the activity on your own. After that comes generalizing, that is relating and formulating the results. After you have finished performing what experiment you were doing, what is the outcome of it? What happened at the end? What is the conclusion? That is generalizing. And at the end comes applying or utilizing the results in your real life environment. How are you going to apply it in your real life? So, learning by doing will involve these steps. Now, learning by doing method cannot be successful for everybody. See, not all the students have the same caliber. They all differ in the intelligence level, and it is very obvious that you cannot expect that all the students or all the children in your class will perform it successfully. Some might be unsuccessful at it for the first time. But the prime factor behind this learning is motivation. The teacher should motivate the students to learn, to perform. Don't worry, whatever may happen, I am there with you. Such statements or statements like, don't worry, I'm there behind you. Such statements motivate the children to perform. They know that even if they make mistakes, the teacher is there to take care of it. The teacher will not shout or scold, but rather help him make it better. Here, to make this method a success, the main key factors are the learner's fundamental needs, attention, interest, their self-reliance, and their curiosity. If there's no curiosity in learning, it does affect the result. This is the best method for teaching science experiments. The place or venue of the experiment may vary with the level of the students. Also, the type of experiments and object used in these experiments also decide the place of the experiments. For example, consider for the third standard students, the solubility of water can be taught by giving salts or sugar with beaker and a stirrer and then giving them the instructions to do the experiment. At middle school level, a smaller experiment can be assigned as homework, like preparation of temporary magnets or collection of metals and non-metal products, something like that. Teaching of biological subjects can be done effectively through observation of environment, like conducting nature walks, field visits, or germination of seeds. In germination of seeds, you can ask the students to sow two or three types of seeds in different bowls, label the bowls with their name, and keep it in a quiet room. And then record the activities like what you did to the seeds, how did you sow them, then what do you think will happen to the seeds, and then observe the seeds the next day and write what actually happened to the seeds. So, you have a record, you maintain a record of what you did, what you think will happen, and what actually happened. You do this for a week. In this way, the children will easily learn the concept of germination of seeds. While doing it themselves. They're performing it themselves. They're seeing it, observing it every day. So they can relate with it very much. Here again, the students must be encouraged for direct observation and recording of the environment and events. Though this method helps in long-term retention of the concepts learned, but it is difficult to use it to teach subjects like history or literature very effectively. But subjects such as computers, science and maths can be very well taught this way. Yes, maths also. You can give them the problem and you can ask them to solve it. So, while solving the problem, they do understand the concepts about maths. So, learning by doing can be very well merged with mathematical subjects. Now, this method has some merits and demerits. Merits can be like learners receive the best knowledge and best learning experiences. It develops and enhances the interest among the students. Plus, the real-time experience of learning by doing makes the students true and honest in their society. The decision-making skills and problem-solving skills are developed very well by this method. They make the students confident and self-reliant. They develop scientific attitude amongst the students. They execute the problems they have selected and finish it to completion. The learning experiences given by the learning by doing method, it retains the knowledge of the user in long-term memory. Now, after this, let us look at some limitations or the demerits of this method. The demerits can be that the teacher must be motivated and enthusiastic in this method. As I had mentioned earlier, it reflects in the student's behavior. If the teacher is not at all enthusiastic or motivated, she cannot motivate the children in turn. So the teacher has to be motivated and enthusiastic. And it's a very time-consuming method. So at times you find it difficult to finish the syllabus in that given time span. So that should be well planned. The teacher should plan accordingly. Now, one more thing is this method is costlier. At times, the students need to spend some resources while experimenting on their own. So, there can be some cost related to it. And the last thing is, the success of this method depends on individual skills of both the teacher and the learner. Now, next we will see is laboratory teaching. It is yet another way of teaching, a very famous and popular way, laboratory teaching. The laboratory method can be thought of as a way of learning by doing method. It is mostly used for subjects which needs practical hands-on experience. There are certain concepts in the field of computers or engineering which are not understood unless and until tried by the student themselves. So, for such concepts, the laboratory teaching is very important. Like, consider while doing programming, no matter how beautifully the teacher will teach you how to write a code for a program, but unless and until you don't practice it yourself on the computer, it's very difficult to get the actual insight of the programming. So for such concepts, for such subjects, it is very important to learn this way. The study of science can properly be applied to laboratory study of the subject. In order to know the facts of science, they must be seen and they must be handled directly on the laboratory tables. The textbooks and other books are not science, but literature. Books are really poor literature at teaching of science. So, a laboratory is a special room equipped with all necessary equipment required to perform various experiments. For students to understand these concepts, it becomes compulsory to attend the laboratory sessions. In this type of teaching, the teacher requires to give proper step-by-step instructions to carefully carry out the experiments. Although the method is purely student-centric, the teacher has to take care that the session runs smoothly and she should help the students in case of difficulty. We cannot appreciate the great labor which is involved in the conduct of good laboratory work. And all these affect the reputation of the teacher. Laboratory teaching develops in the pupils the ability of interpreting what he sees in the light of experience and thus makes him an observer later. The students should be taught only by reasoning about the material objects, so that they may not come to hasty and haphazard conclusions. Laboratory teaching has the advantage over classroom teaching, as the performance of an experiment entirely diverts the attention of the student from the thought that he is studying. In a classroom, the teacher presents a statement from a book according to his conception, and then the effort is made by the students to reproduce the statements in their own way. In the laboratory, the students encounter the fact directly without the intermediate steps which involve the teacher. Laboratory work is undoubtedly of value in the cultivation of mind. It brings the teacher and the thought in close contact, and thus the personality of the teacher influences the character of the students. In the laboratory, the student is free to work in accordance with his conception, and there is no bondage of authority. Activities and experiments are unavoidable assets to a science lesson. Doing things with reacting materials, sharp instruments, glass apparatus can be fun. Also, they can be dangerous. So, the teacher must ensure that the work is done in such a way that no accident occurs. Students should be taught the dangers inherent in each activity and how to avoid hazards like burns and fire, cuts, broken glasses, heating in test tubes, smelling and testing dangerous chemicals and gases, acids and oxidizing materials, and so many things that go to support combustion or burning. Of course, many of our daily life activities are potentially dangerous as well, such as lighting a fire, crossing a street, driving an automobile, or even a path may result in an accident. But we do not stop doing all these things just because of the danger involved in each of these activities, right? The same philosophy should be applied in science teaching and laboratory teaching as well. Activities in the laboratory can never be avoided in the view of science teaching in school. But the students should be instructed how to avoid these dangers, how to avoid these hazards. So this should be remembered, that safety should be considered, should be taken into account, but that should not form a block in the student's mind, or it should not stop the students from performing the activities. Now, after the laboratory method, let's move on to demonstration. Demonstration will involve explaining of a difficult concept with the help of using various aids. Children often learn better if they see or observe the happenings themselves. Models, presentations, etc., etc. I used to introduce a new skill. Demonstrations help increase the students' interest and it strengthens the recapitulation because they provide connection between facts and its actual application. It also increases the observational and reasoning skills of the students. Demonstrations become more effective when verbalization accompanies them. For example, in a half demonstration, half lecture, an explanation accompanies the actions performed. It is a generally accepted learning theory that the greater the degree of active participation and sensory involvement by the learner, the more the effective the learning will be. For example, consider the occurrence of eclipse. It can be demonstrated in the class by using aids like globe, ball, torch. The teacher can set up the apparatus and then explain. So, verbal explanation plus the aids. Like she can say the torch is the sun and then the globe will be the earth and the ball will play the moon. And then she can demonstrate and show them what exactly is eclipse, how they will occur, solar eclipse, lunar eclipse, all these terms. So while seeing the demonstration and hearing the verbal comments of the teacher, the students learn better. Even while teaching biology, you must have seen teachers getting skeletons to class or models of heart. So all these things when brought to class to support the learning, it helps students learn better. They can relate. See, you cannot get a real heart, but a model of the heart will definitely give them an image of what actually it will be in reality. So these things do help in learning. Now, if we are talking about demonstration, one more concept which comes to my mind is simulation. Simulation is the act of imitating the behavior of some situation or some process by means of something which is suitably similar to it. A model which represents the key characteristics or the behavior of the process is first developed. After the system is developed, the model, it will represent the system. And simulation will represent the operation on the system. The concept of simulation is used when the real system is not accessible or it is too costly to engage the real system. It is used in many fields, many fields. One example which you can consider is the war games. War games, they are a simulation of military operations, which is intended to train the military commanders or to demonstrate a situation or to test a proposed strategy. Or you can consider an airplane training scenario. Here they will use 5 simulators. A flight simulator is a device that artificially recreates the aircraft flight and the environment in which it flies. This can be used for pilot training. Like, you cannot ask a new person to directly go in the real plane and fly. It may put his life at risk. So, before the pilot gets actually fully trained, he is trained on this artificial system. They are also used while designing or for other purposes like testing whether the plane, the model of the plane, will it fly properly, whether all the parameters are working properly. Even in medical colleges, for some operation or for some kind of testing on human body where they cannot actually use a real human, they will use a simulator. So this technique can also be used. Till now, we saw a variety of methods of teaching. To increase the efficiency of teaching further, we can combine it with technology. You can use audiovisual aids, computers, interactive whiteboards, projection technologies. You can combine all these in your teaching as well and enhance the teaching process much, much better. The researchers suggest some of the methods can be very well applied by the modern teachers, as the researchers feel that basically the core objective of teaching should never be deviated by the use of an innovative method. These methods were suggested as an extension to the traditional method of teaching. Now, according to the situation, you can these were just a few examples. You can even create a method of your own. You can refer to the internet for more teaching options. I hope you all have understood these concepts and I was successful at transferring my knowledge to you. So, till we meet next time, thank you.